Hi, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Let's Talk Cloud Networking. Unscripted, with your hosts, myself, John Gonzalez, and Numan Mustafa. So today, we're really fortunate to be joined by not just one, but two AWS Cloud Infrastructure Network Specialists and thought leaders who recently joined Aviatrix. We have Evgeny Vaganov and Abdul Rahim talking to us and candidly sharing their knowledge, their customer learnings, and experiences, not just whilst at AWS, but also giving their own personal views and how customers are approaching their cloud journey into public cloud. So hello, Evgeny, and hello, Abdul. Welcome to our podcast. Please take a few minutes, introduce yourselves, tell us a little bit about your own personal journey and your background.
Hi, John. This is Evgeny. Can go first. Thank you for the invite and welcome to everyone who dialed into this podcast. Yeah, so look, I've joined Aviatrix very recently. I joined our solution engineering team to lead our chapter in APAC. I'm based out of Sydney in Australia, and I work with customers across the region. Anyone in this time zone or nearby, you know, feel free to reach out. I'm always available, and love to talk to you. So look, I've been with AWS for 9 years prior to joining Aviatrix in a variety of different roles. Most recently, I lead specialist networking SA team there across Asia Pacific and Japan region, and also built a big community of like-minded folks who are interested in cloud networking. Cloud networking is interesting because it's been developing and accelerating in recent years. We kind of started with some very basic functionality, and somewhere along the way, enterprise customers demanded more visibility, more features, and more things from cloud. And so I'm super excited to join Aviatrix because we can actually address a lot of customer demand and help them. That's me. That's Evgeny. And Abdul, do you want to talk about yourself?
Thank you, John, for inviting us here. And thank you, listeners, for listening in. Hi, so I'm Abdul. I have joined Aviatrix earlier this year for some of the reasons that Evgeny mentioned earlier as well. So my journey had been, my networking journey started at a service provider based in Saudi Arabia, where I was actually working in the network operations of a service provider, right? And we were doing all sorts of weird technologies in Saudi Arabia to provide broadband access to customers. And at that time, that technology was called L2TP access. I'm not sure if it still exists or not. But from there, I moved to Cisco. I worked at Cisco for around 15 years. I worked in different divisions, different departments at Cisco. And soon, you know, I was a specialist for BGP, OSPF, MPLS, and a go-to guy for people. And in the world, which you call service provider support group, there was an escalation group, and I was part of the escalation team and helping customers out in North America region on some of these technologies. Then I moved to what we called, you know, some customer focused role where I was helping some customers. Then I moved to what we call a technical marketing engineering, and my focus was multicast on L3 VPNs. We got an opportunity to write some white papers, some troubleshooting guides and whatnot, which are, I still find ought to be still alive at Cisco, you know, website. Then, you know, I got to my journey to VMware, where I was part of NSX business unit, and I was helping customers to rapidly deploy what we call the NSX platform and help them with virtual networking. And from there on, I took some government projects, worked on my own consulting, trying to develop my business and to see the business side of things. And then finally, you know, I decided to move to cloud because I was seeing a lot of surge on queries from customers on cloud side. So I decided to join, and I got an opportunity to start working with AWS, where I had been for around 2.5 years. And my last role there was a network SME for the professional services organization. And we had a team called Global Specialty Practice. And, you know, in Global Specialty Practice, I was taking care of APJ region. So I was kind of enabling the professional services organization in the region on network-specific opportunities, and I was also taking on some of the huge opportunities where we didn't have enough staffing to kind of cater for those specific technologies. So for example, you know, I came across a customer who was using ACI on-prem, and they wanted some network specialists from AWS, and it was difficult to find such skill set, and I was able to fit in, and I kind of helped them navigate through that journey. So that's me. I had a lot of discussions with different customers in the region on AWS networking aspects and their cloud networking journey as such. And, you know, I'm happy to be here at Aviatrix now. Feel free to reach out to me on LinkedIn. I'm happy to talk about your cloud journey, any cloud challenges, networking challenges that you have that I can help with.
That's great.
That's awesome.
I'm Gideon and Reem, thanks a lot. We are actually very fortunate to have both of you now at Aviatrix. You know, years of experience in traditional networking, and now a lot of experience with AWS, and now with Aviatrix. I think our customers, joint customers, will be very, very happy to see you both helping them in their cloud journey. Now, before normally, and I see that Evgeny, you are having a good sip of tea, and I know that Raheem is also a fan of tea. So I'm not going to ask whether you are a tea guy or a coffee guy, but I'm going to ask you a trick question. Let's say if I give you 4 hours extra in your day, right? What would you end up doing? Quick answer.
I'm a tea guy, Norman. 4 hours extra. Wow. I'll be hands on, right? So I'm in it. Time, you know, of my career, where I'm kind of going back, being a bit more hands-on with the tooling and learning other clouds. Right, I've been AWS for 9 years. Now I need to catch up and kind of go and learn a few other things and being hands-on. I think that's what I'll do with my 4 hours.
That's great, okay. Raheem, what about you? What will you be doing if I gave you 4 hours in your day extra?
I would split that time between some of the things that I need to get done, spend some time with my family as well, which I kind of miss sometimes because I'm getting too much busy at Aviatrix. But other thing that I would do is, again, you know, to kind of navigate the different cloud networking, because I kind of miss of how things are done in other clouds.
That's great. That's great. That's a great segue to probably our next question, right? Is obviously you guys spend a lot of time in helping customers, and you have been almost like from a very early days, especially Evgeny, right, of cloud journey for a lot of customers. So what is the common trend that you see in the last 2-3 years around what type of customers are moving to the cloud? You know, are they like in a rush to move and vacate their data centers and say, hey, you know, now the mandate has coming from top down and we just need to vacate? Or are they sort of slowly taking their time? What are you seeing mostly? What are the common trends? So maybe Evgeny, you can start with, and Raheem, you can chime in as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Look, I've started early on. You know, like back when I started, there were folks who would pick up a phone and go like, oh, you're calling from Amazon, like, you know, we're not interested in books kind of thing, right? And so, and then you'd have to go and explain like what cloud computing is and how it's going to revolutionize the world. And so, you know, like those conversations don't happen anymore. Like pretty much everyone knows about cloud, you know, even people outside of IT industry, they kind of understand the benefits, right? They go read the Economist kind of journals and they understand the revolution that's happening in our digital lives brought to you by cloud. You know, like the thing that you have to understand about the region, right? Asia Pacific, is that we're a little bit behind North America. Right. You know, and we didn't get our first regions for a while. Right. You know, like somewhere like Japan, a region there was established by AWS in 2010, in Australia in the late 2012. Right. And that's like a few years behind North America. But even like other cloud players came in even later. Right. Azure in 2014. And I think Google about 16, 17. Right. And so like the market maturity, just through the virtue of not being, you know, like all this different infrastructure players not being there, you know, with the local capabilities, you know, that kind of puts the region on the back foot. So it's not as mature as some other parts of the world. You know, being smaller and more nimble, you know, countries like Australia, I think, you know, the market is generally catching up. And so what we've started seeing in the last few years, right, during my conversation with customers are really kind of getting, you know, to a maturity with one cloud. You know, they've got their networking configured. You know, they've got their direct connect set up, things like that, private connectivity. And so, and they just started to sort of look at, you know, different things that are happening within the business, because occasionally, you know, one of the business units will go and say, oh, you know, we've got this new capability that we want to try, but it happens to be outside of our primary cloud that we selected, you know, back ages ago. Or, for example, they go and acquire another business and that business happens to run in a different cloud, right? And so for no fault of their own, right, they end up in that multi-cloud situation, right? And so, you know, they kind of start seeing all those different challenges in terms of how to go and integrate and have a common set of tools across different clouds so they can have the same approach. So, yeah, that's what I've been seeing quite a bit. Yeah. Abdul, what about yourself?
Yeah, so my journey to cloud has not been that like old. I started getting involved with cloud in 2019 timeframe. And at that time, customers had been like on cloud, and many of my conversations have always been when, you know, professional services teams get involved. And what I have found is that when AWS professional services get involved with customers, looking at the networking current state and help them move to the target state, we find that, you know, the network, cloud networks are not well thought, not well built, in the sense that, you know, many times I have come across situations where customers like have like very DevOps model kind of way where they go and, you know, every developer goes and spins up his own environment, right? And they don't necessarily know to use what kind of IP address space, for example, right? So I've come across customers where like developers are building environments and they happen to be in the same IP address space. And, you know, now in future, they come back and they say, okay, you know, we need to connect these environments for different reasons. And now they're stuck into this problem of how to solve this, right? Which I believe not native CSP tools have any means of doing that. So that's one bigger problem that I've seen. The other thing that I've seen is that, you know, even within a single cloud, when customers build their environment and even IP addressing is taken care of, the architecture is not well thought and things are just, you know, put in crazy ways, right? So you'll find some few VPCs with different sorts of workloads in there, right? Where it's really difficult to kind of segment things out, right? And we come across these situations and we have to, let's say, insert and take them to the next journey of whatever the cloud service provider tooling is. And for example, in AWS case, it used to be like many of the times, those were migrations from normal VPC peering to Transit Gateway, for example. It's really difficult to get through that and navigate through the journey, especially when customers have not well thought their architecture, plus they have started using things which are not supported in the next generation architecture, for example. Just basic things like, you know, they've been using security group referencing, for example, in a VPC peering. And I'm going a little bit deeper in the details because that's where the devil is. And unfortunately, I've come across these situations quite a bit, and that's where my experience lies. Deeper into the networking, what you find is that an architecture is missing and things are very tangled. And what needs to be done?
So sorry to cut you off, but I think, but do you think that this is how it's? I mean, if you look at it, right, that a lot of these customers are organically growing, right? They come in, they wanted to test the waters, right? Things were not very mission critical. They didn't know what they didn't know, so they went in, they started playing with certain small projects, and then also, I mean, if you look at AWS, their mantra is go and build, right? So they will say, okay, yeah, these are the tools, and you go and figure it out. And the DevOps started doing things, and obviously DevOps people are not networking and security people. So they did to prove, yes, it works, right? But now you get into this mess where you said, right, the things are not built properly, and they're realizing that now when the mission critical workloads are moving in, you need to have a proper architecture. Is that a pretty accurate statement?
There are two things about that. So initially, when what my thought process is, when they build this up, they think that the whatever application they're building will not become mission critical, but it happens to become mission critical, right? Many times you build something and you test something, and then when you scale that, you know, you soon start realizing that many of the other businesses are now relying on your application, and that application itself becomes business critical, right? The other piece is, as you mentioned, that, you know, there is no architecture for moving in mission critical applications into the cloud. And then there is no visibility to begin with. There is no structure where, you know, you can have any visibility. Like, I had one conversation with one specific customer, and I'm not like, what happened with that conversation is that the customer wanted us to do a migration from, you know, VPC based infrastructure to transit gateway based architecture. And they had a separate, you know, compliant environment. They have separate non-compliant environment, right? And they said our compliant environment and non-compliant environment completely different, and they completely belong to a different segmentation domain. There is no connectivity between them. So we go and do the routing table design, like the how your routing domains and segmentation should look like, right? And we do all that exercise, and everybody's happy and whatnot. And when we start running some sort of, you know, visibility that is there, what kind of visibility do you have? And if you don't, then we start building that tooling for them to get some sort of visibility of how the traffic patterns are and whatnot. And we soon find out that there is a shared infrastructure that both of these are talking to. And mm-hmm. through that shared infrastructure, there are applications talking to each other, right? Mm-hmm. And all of that design that we did earlier just stays on the whiteboard, right? And nothing of that gets done. So when you start untangling things, working, you know, deeper into the customer net environment, you find that the lack of visibility has a different perception for different personas that are sitting within the organization.
And I think, guys, the lack of architecture from the CSP for cloud networking or cloud network security is really going to come back and bite them at some point, because it's a sort of, as Newman said, you know, just go and build. You know, here's your services, pick what services you want, get your trolley out, your shopping basket out, and go and pick this service and that service, and then go and cobble it all together. There's no best practice architecture from any of the CSPs that I've seen ever, which makes me wonder how seriously do you think, you know, especially with your experience from AWS, how seriously do you think AWS take networking and network security? How much innovation do you think they're putting in that space? Because they provide hundreds of services. A lot of services they provide are very good services. But, you know, in the space of cloud networking and cloud network security, I see a lot of weaknesses there. You know, one at least is a lack of architecture to follow, right? No best practice architecture or guidelines to follow. Do you think they're spending a lot of time and money in innovation and developing new feature functionality? And if they do, are they doing it quickly? Or is it just a, you know, hey, look, I'm just going to provide you with some basic networking services and, you know, you go ahead and use those. What do you think?
I can go first on that one. Yeah, I think, like, if you look at every CSP, right, they have massive budgets on research and development, right? So they're obviously investing heavily into innovation. But if you look at priorities, you know, like at least from AWS perspective, you know, I've been there long enough to know them really well. They always look at security as number one priority, right? Mm-hmm. If, you know, something is not secure, you know, that goes into building of new services, existing services, things like patching, zero-day exploits, right? Like, it has to be secure. If cloud is not secure, you know, the customer is going to pull out their workloads, go back to on-prem, go back into something where they feel more secure. And mm-hmm. so they spend a tremendous amount of budget and money on security. The other thing they care about is durability, right? If you put your data into CSP and they lose it, right, that's, again, you're going to pull out your remaining data because mm-hmm. you're going to be like very, very scared. And then they look at availability, right? No one wants to be able to go and kind of lose their data and access to their data, right? Though people generally want data to be always available and APIs and workloads that they put in there, right? Only then they look at performance, right? How fast things are actually working, right? You know, things like jitter on the network, things like packet loss. And only then they start looking at functionality, like the new stuff, right? So it's like way further down in terms of the priority of a mm-hmm. typical CSP. And so, you know, once you start looking at that innovation, right, you would have seen waves of innovation in networking space on CSPs. Like if you look at AWS, right, they started with EC2 Classic, then they created a VPC, and lots of customers migrated from EC2 Classic to VPC, right? And then people figured out, oh, a VPC is not enough, right? And I think we're seeing like the likes of GCP, they kind of tell everyone like, hey, there's one global VPC, right? But it doesn't scale. Like it's been proven on other platforms already. And, you know, that they've got multiple VPCs. So now you need to connect them. And so they had to build like VPC peering, right? But that doesn't scale really well because in the enterprise world, we found out long ago that you need to have the core of your network and different parts, the segments, the network segments of your network, so you can isolate during, you know, depending on your security requirements. And so all of a sudden, they had to go and build something else, right? And that's where the partner ecosystem started catching up, right? That's where Aviatrix story actually begins, by building and interconnecting those VPCs in a, you know, while staying sort of cloud native, but bringing the wealth of experience from the cloud, you know, networking and more traditional networking, because that's been proven with time, right? And a lot of the things that cloud does is kind of going back 30, 40 years and kind of looking at what's been done and reinventing it and maybe changing how it's being delivered, as opposed to actually like doing a completely different new technology. And so, you know, there's been definitely lots of innovation, but it's just the maturity. Like cloud is always looking back and like reinventing what's been done, right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, and when they do that, you know, they can't just go and do 30 years of networking, enterprise sort of architecture, consistent across clouds, right? They need time. And, you know, that time, you know, they're still not there. You know, it will take them many more years to get where, you know, where networking elsewhere got to through that evolution based on customer requirements, based on, you know, what the industry observed. So, yeah, like it's an interesting question, right? There's definitely lots of innovation happening, but it's just not like there's no exact target state, right? It's being incrementally changed over time, which makes it very difficult for customers. They never know where you know, it's always... you know, the ball is always shifting, right? The goalpost for that, you know, for that customer, like they always have to migrate. And I think that's where, you know, our value proposition here at Aviatrix, like we actually have something that scales because it's been proven in a traditional, you know, networking world. Everyone knows your kind of core, you know, distribution, access layers. You know, we've built data centers using that technology. We know that it scales really, really well. That meets the needs of enterprise and different industries. And so, you know, and we've built that architecture for multiple cloud service providers, which I think is really, really cool, right? That we can actually go and reuse that without having to migrate every few years, you know, from one shiny thing to the next.
Yeah, right. And I think that I agree with you that I think the biggest challenge that I see with a lot of the CSPs, and we have done this session with other black belts who have come from other clouds, and they say that, you know, CSP's main focus is not networking, because networking is mostly like a cost center for them. They actually make money from compute, they make money from storage, they make money from services. And then they obviously they have the advantage that they control the entire underlay and the infrastructure, but they also have a very unfair disadvantage where they have to cater to millions and millions of customers. So as you said, right, the focus is always on durability, on security, on availability, because, you know, customers are asking for simple things, but at very large scale, right? And that's what actually is giving them revenue. So the hyper focus on being the best in networking security is not something which is, I've not seen in any cloud provider, but this is not where they make money. And this is where the partners come in, like partners like Aviatrix comes in, because our DNA is networking security. We have been doing this, we focus here. And we do it in a way which is more like a cloud native, right? Cloud native, understanding how clouds are built, right? So which probably will come later to that question. But one question I do have is, obviously, I think when I came in this space, right, that mostly people were picking one cloud, right? So okay, I'll just go into AWS or Azure, right? GCP was not in the picture. Oracle was not in the picture 2-3 years ago. Either it was, mostly it was AWS. That was the gold standard. Even now, I think, I was just talking to someone in GCP, you know, last week, and they were saying that for them, AWS is the gold standard. This is where they want to attract all of their customers, right? So in many ways, it was just one customer early on, or one CSP early on. But how did you start seeing the change, right, with your customers? You know, what trends have you started seeing from the perspective of leveraging other clouds as well? Maybe you can chime in a little bit on that. Maybe Raheem, you can start first, and then you can chime in later.
So yeah, this is true. What you're mentioning here is about the multi-cloud piece. And what any customers that I have worked with, which so any customers who actually have the budget to pay AWS professional services, they're enterprise customers, and enterprise customers are not, in my experience, are not bound to one cloud. They may have a very small segment in a specific cloud, but there are segments. So, and the reason of that is that when, you know, we have customers and there are different teams within the customers, multiple different teams go to different clouds because their application behaves the best in that specific cloud, right? Mm-hmm. So I was working with one customer and I know that there is this thing called, you know, what we do use for data within, there is a product called Redshift that AWS has, which is, I believe, I'm not very much familiar, but Evgeny, correct me if I'm wrong, it's more to do with data analytics, right? You know, you have to do your query and whatnot, right? And there is a separate business unit within the same customer that's using, you know, BigQuery or something in GCP, right? And they were the application that's being done, it's the analytic application. One business unit is using AWS because that that application that that specific business unit had behaved best in using Redshift, and the other customer was using to GCP. And although that's the same sort of application, but different teams go to different clouds for that. And you cannot like dictate them which cloud to go to. And some of it is the application performance better. And the other aspect is that the team who's actually doing it is actually more skilled in that specific technology or with that specific CSP, right? So these two have dictating where that company needs to expand their footprint to, right? So it's those people who actually dictate that, you know, we need a presence in a cloud. You do it for us. If you don't do it, we'll do it ourselves using our credit cards that has typically been the model before, right? So any customers that I have worked with had been multi-cloud, right? Mm-hmm. And there had been presence in different clouds for those specific customers. And they are using different, and I would say that when I say multi-cloud, I would say that there are multiple single clouds. So they I haven't seen too much of the place where, you know, the applications have dependency on elements that belong to different clouds, but it's more about each customer is building a separate single cloud, right? Yep. At this point. I think the journey that I'm seeing is once you start building those applications, there will be definitely interdependency between those applications. And then you will start seeing that spur of multi-cloud, actual multi-cloud, where there is dependency of applications sitting in one cloud to another cloud. That's what my observation had been so far. Evgeny, you want to add?
Yeah, look, I think like, you know, every, you know, company organization out there has a limited budget, limited number of talented people in the organization, right? And so quite often they don't want to spread themselves thin, right? They want to go and, you know, and make a bet on specific technology, you know, tooling, CSP, right? And, you know, that's understandable. And that's what I've seen kind of in the early days, right? And, you know, I've seen some other folks that would say something like, oh, but we have too much concentration risk, right? We shouldn't really be betting on one place, mm-hmm. right? On one horse. Or for example, you know, we've got some regulatory requirements, right? And yeah. The regulator tells us that, you know, we shouldn't be putting all our eggs in one basket. You know, that would be sort of some of those customer concerns. And so what I've seen is that, you know, back in the early days, if you were to try to go and do like application across multiple CSPs, or even like using, you know, a part of application over here, maybe front end and maybe analytics workload on another, it was still like really, really difficult to go and operate those multiple clouds. But I think finally I'm seeing the tooling starting to catch up, right? Like, you know, if you look at Terraform, you know, you can use that across multiple clouds and even, you know, to configure some of your on-prem stuff. And, you know, your skills become sort of transferable, right? The underlying services are still different in different clouds, right? But the skill set becomes transferable. If you look at the identity space, I think with the likes of Okta and Ping, you know, those guys operate quite well across different clouds. If you look at the analytics space that you brought up, Abdul, before, you look at the likes of Snowflake, which were able to do that across multiple clouds in kind of that very cloud-native way, right? They consume cloud-native services in order to build that analytics capability. Even if you look at machine learning with Databricks, you know, again, same thing. You look at logging with Splunk, right? I think, like, if you start looking about this ecosystem around CSPs, all of a sudden, the tools are maturing that can give you very similar capability, and yet they can run across multiple clouds, right? And I think, like, networking is one of those spaces which was lagging a little bit behind, right? And, you know, like, I personally helped many customers to kind of build private connectivity between clouds, and they had to go pull the gear and collocation facilities, right? And, you know, the more native way of connecting clouds was kind of very much lagging behind. You know, and that's where Aviatrix is coming in to kind of to do what Snowflake did, what Databricks is doing, right? What Okta has done, what Splunk has done, right? Those folks can actually run across multiple clouds, right? And I think, like, networking can be a common set of tools that runs really, really well across multiple clouds as well.
Yeah, Kini, I think you covered some really good points on why people are going to multi-cloud. I think there are more and more reasons, right? I mean, like, regulation is one example that Raheem, that you gave, right? Or Evgeny, you gave that. So in some cases, you know, you are mandated, if you are a service provider or vendor offering services, you need to be regulated that you are in multiple clouds. And also, I think the other thing that have started to happen is all of the, at least the four or five major cloud providers are starting to mature. They're trying to get better and better. And early on, like three, four, five years ago, AWS was the only game in town. Now, other cloud providers are building the niche services. And at some point, I think the process of osmosis will happen, where workloads will start to get balanced across different CSPs. And then, and you would see that, you know, Larry Ellison calling airline customers saying, "Hey, I will buy 10 of your planes. You come and use my cloud for the infrastructure." It will happen. And this will balance or normalize the workloads across CSP, because all be around performance and cost. And if, yes, I have 60% of the IaaS workloads that can work in the 50% less price on Oracle, then why not, right? So it's just about making it easy for the operations team and architecture team to run these clouds, because that's going to be the bottleneck. And if you're able to have that architectural framework and operational simplicity to leverage these IaaS, especially for IaaS, then I think you will see that distribution is starting to happen. So a great point.
I think it's great. It always comes down to common architecture, consistency, and visibility across one or multiple clouds, you know. But guys, let me ask you a little bit more of a different type of question. So how did you guys get to hear about Aviatrix in your careers, and what made you join Aviatrix? What made you come here? You had great careers, AWS, Cisco, other companies, etc. Why Aviatrix? Abdul, you go. You're off mute.
Yeah. So I had been too much networking focused, as I mentioned earlier, right? And I joined AWS, and I had been a network specialist out there in the ProServe organization. But again, you know, what I found, and some of the examples that I gave earlier, is that I started working with one of the customers that was multi-cloud, right? And the way they solved the multi-cloud connectivity at that point is using the colocation facility, right? But they were also multi-region. And when you talk about multi-region, they didn't have colocation facility, or they didn't have any on-premises infrastructure in different countries. So guess what happened? In order to connect these different, you know, workloads that were sitting in different clouds, but they happen to be in a remote region, they will help in the traffic back to on-prem, right? Which is going across regions, yeah. Right? And they thought about bringing something like, you know, doing some, building some IPsec tunnels and doing this and cloud native tooling, and that's not going anywhere, right? It's not going to scale much. So I was looking at the different solutions that, you know, we can use to address some of those customers, you know, some of the use cases there. And I got acquainted to Aviatrix, and I saw Aviatrix was doing this. I also, to be very frank, I also saw some other vendors that were doing that as well. But what was happening there is what I found was that AVTX was the platform that provided the customer with their data within the accounts. So it is not a SaaS service. So I'm not sending my data to anybody else's account. So even I'm coming from AWS, right? So even if you deploy a transit gateway as a customer and you're sending traffic to a transit gateway, right, you're actually sending traffic to somebody like AWS service account where the service sits, right? But with AVTX, what I'm seeing is that all of your data stays within your local account, right? Whether that's across region, whether that's across clouds. And that's one of the things that attracted me. Plus, when I saw some of the demos of Copilot, you know, I was really amazed to see the level of details and the, you know, even things like, you know, what is the latency between my different regions, right? Mm-hmm. And to get that historical data of the latency between regions is something that's not visible to customers today. There are some outside, you know, you'll find some websites that will kind of publish that, okay, the latency between US West 1 and US West 2 is blah, right? But there's no native thing that is available to you. But this platform gives me all of that detail. Wherever my workload is, whatever my account or whatever my traffic is seeing the latency in my account, I can see that data. So that actually attracted me quite a bit. And I started, you know, talking to some of the people who I know from VMware world and from Cisco time, right? Like Noman. And, you know, that's what made this happen. But I'm glad to be here. And that's what, you know, helped me move here.
That's fantastic, Abdul. How about you, Evgeny?
Yeah, thanks, John. Yeah, look, I knew about Aviatrix from 2015, roughly, right? Back then, Aviatrix was helping solve multi-VPC connectivity challenges, and I think was the AWS exclusive kind of platform born in the cloud, right? Using cloud native tooling as much as possible and kind of connecting, VPCs, multiple VPCs in as cloud native way as possible, right? And, you know, that technology at the time was called something called Transit VPC, right? And, you know, like a lot of people probably have heard then about Transit VPC later from some other vendor, basically like sort of went and replicated what Aviatrix was doing, kind of tried to use their virtual routers, but didn't really try to integrate with cloud native tooling, right? And so like I've heard about it, but because Aviatrix was a North American company, you know, like if you're not present locally with local resources support in APAC, you know, not many customers probably gonna go and use you, right? And so I kind of like heard about it. I thought this is a great solution, right? But you know, I then moved on and did few other things, and again like Aviatrix came back. I think when Transit Gateway was built by AWS, you know, Aviatrix was one of the early orchestration tools there. I'm like, oh, that's really cool, right? But you know, we kind of, you know, what it was at AWS at the time, we kind of got a tool that, you know, Aviatrix was doing for us. And, you know, like, why would we need Aviatrix? And I think that was a pivotal moment probably for Aviatrix at the time to realize that, hey, you know, like we can never really, you know, be successful being just on a single CSP, right? A single cloud and kind of focusing on and, you know, putting all the eggs in one basket, just like our, you know, customers are thinking, like all the different enterprises out there, you know, like, would you really, in the fullness of time, have all your workloads, all your things with a single CSP? And I think the answer is no. Even if you're not thinking that way today, I think, you know, you're not thinking that way until you are thinking, you know, the multi-cloud sort of way, right? And have workloads in different places. I think like as Aviatrix realized that and pivoted towards, oh, we actually need to do exactly the same thing, but be consistent across different clouds, because that's where market is shifting, right? I think that's the big one for me, because I picked, you know, virtualization early on, you know, when that was just sort of starting to come to the market. I then moved to public cloud, you know, with AWS very early on when they just sort of arrived to Australia. And now I think multi-cloud is taking off, right? It had some early false starts, right? But now I think finally it's taking off. And even if you look at, like, you know, the industry as a whole, like look at Adam Selipsky, AWS CEO, right? I think he gave an interview like a couple of days ago, and he said, we're so early on, right? We're like 5 or 10% of workloads transition to cloud, right? And that's a $1 trillion market. That's massive, right? 90% of workloads still haven't made it to the cloud, right? And when they make it to the cloud, it's going to be a multi-cloud way, right? And they're going to have a network which is consistent, across the clouds with observability and focus on network security. But the thing that really attracted me in the end of the day to Aviatrix specifically, right? Because I think there's maybe some other players now starting to realize, hey, what Aviatrix is doing is really cool, right? And start to investing into that space. But what attracted me specifically to Aviatrix is the focus on end-to-end, right? Mm-hmm. If you look at yourself and if you're a network persona, right? You're a network engineer, network architect, maybe you're a network security persona, right? I think what attracted me specifically to Aviatrix is the focus on end-to-end journey and experience for that type of persona, right? Because those personas, they've been neglected, overlooked, you know, the DevOps type folks being, you know, all the favorites in the past few years. Nowadays, it's like machine learning people, right? And, you know, people like myself who are very passionate about networking, we've been sort of neglected for many, many years, right? And I think like Aviatrix is cool because it actually pays attention to folks like myself.
So we're making networking interesting again and fun again, I think, in the cloud.
Make it sexy. We'll bring the sexy back.
Exactly. I think you said it right, Gini, that like trillions of dollars are going to be poured into this transformation that's happening in front of us. And that trillions of dollars will not be tied to a single cloud. It's going to be 5, 6, 7 clouds and back to the on-prem world, right? So that's where I think the trillions of dollars are. So I think definitely Aviatrix is the right place. Let me ask you this question. For a very long time, the word multi-cloud was banned inside AWS, right? And we have been a partner of AWS for a very long time. And we used to remove the word multi-cloud from our posters whenever we do our events with AWS. Is this now acceptable, or do they call it in a very different way to be politically correct? Dave, what is your thought?
It's still like, you know, not something that I think AWS is ready to accept and embrace fully, right? Other CSPs, I think, embrace it left, right, and center. You know, there's a thing called AWS Anywhere, right? It's like running AWS technology anywhere, including like other clouds, right? I think that's more acceptable, probably, way of doing it, right? But, you know, going back to the $1 trillion question, like, it's nuts to like think that, you know, everyone's going to put all their eggs in one basket, right? You look at, I don't know, any industry, cars, right? You've got so many different cars. No one's going to drive just Teslas in, you know, 10 years from now, 20 years from now. Yes, you know, that's a great industry, great cars. You know, I've got one myself, and I've got another on pre-order. But, you know, it's not going to be the only thing, right? You look at airline industry, right? That industry is very mature, consolidated over many years. You know, you've got at least two major players in that industry. So it would be crazy to think that, you know, everyone's will end up with like, you know, single cloud. You know, even like you look at the airline companies, they have in their, you know, in their fleet, they have airplanes from like, you know, the different companies. So yeah, I think, you know, the world is definitely going to be, you know, like using multiple CSPs as it matures and continues to grow.
So another question that I have, which I think has been a topic of interest in the recent cloud wars. I think that there was a cloud wars conference happening in San Francisco this week, and there is this new trend of quote unquote industry clouds that are popping up now more and more. You know, so my definition of industry cloud is, you know, hardware and infrastructure is a commodity, right? So now when you have a specialist, let's say if you have a financial specialist like a Goldman Sachs, or if you have a healthcare or like a Cerner, right? Or if you have a Splunk, or if you have a Snowflake, that basically is your skill set, and your product, your software is your specialty, and your skill is your specialty, right? So when I say SaaS, what I'm saying is that a skill as a service, that will make up that industry cloud. But what my you know, thought process is that, and you can tell me whether you agree or not, that having an infrastructure that can scale up and down and can meet the SLA of a mission critical application is not a core strength of everybody. Right. So these people, or these trends that we are seeing where you will have those industry clouds like a, you know, Snowflake, or you have a SAP cloud, HANA cloud, in my opinion, this will be better built on CSPs because they've already proven how to scale up, how to provide mission critical SLAs from availability, from durability, as Gary was saying. And then you will see more and more of that specialty coming out. So running a private cloud on top of these CSPs infrastructure and offering that as a service, in my opinion, as opposed to having your own, building your own data centers and trying to build your own private cloud, because you were never good at it. Because if you were good at it, you wouldn't be in the public cloud in the first place. And so what is your thought in terms of this trend of industry cloud? And I think what I'm trying to say is Evatrix fits right in, because whenever you want to have a product that you want to specify across multiple clouds, right? Or if you want to basically build this industry cloud or a skilled specialty cloud, this is where Evatrix becomes that cornerstone, because you will be running across multiple infrastructure provided from these CSPs. Everybody has their own abstract, constructs that they have. And what we do is we leverage all of those constructs underneath, but then we provide you that simplicity, the consistency across multiple CSPs to host your services and products on top of it. So what is your take on that?
Naman, you've been talking about utility, right? Like every CSP at the end of the day, they have utility services, you know, compute, storage, connectivity through networking, and they got to continue to try to differentiate themselves, right? You know, you look at ARM-based CPU, you look at some of the, latest kind of confidential computing stuff, you know, like everyone's got to try to continue to kind of differentiate what's running under the hood and present it as a, you know, as a benefit to a customer, right? But if you look at the broader value chain, right, and there was a day, you know, how much value is that you run maybe 5% faster on the specific hardware, like, or 10% faster, right? I think in the grand scheme of things, that's not a lot, right? A lot of the value to the actual end user of an application, it comes from stuff that's built on top of that utility. It's the actual software, right? And that's the thing where industry cloud comes in, right? It's building that deeply integrated with rich functionality software on top of this utility platforms. And, you know, at the end of the day, that's what users going to see. Like, you know, like if I look at my iPhone, for example, I've got a whole bunch of different apps, right? Don't really care what's the backend of that app, right? I care about the utility from the actual app that it provides to me, right? And I think that deep integration, the industry clouds, and you look at like Cerner's been acquired by Oracle recently in that medical space, I think we're going to continue seeing a lot of that. And even if you look at investment from major CSPs, like look at AWS racing towards analytics and machine learning, right? You look at Google differentiating itself through deep integration with Google AdWords, Google Analytics, right? You look at Microsoft, the whole ecosystem around Azure AD, Office 365, right? Providing actual deep value. We're going to continue to see more of that, because a lot more value is in the software, less in the actual underlying utility that is core strengths of those CSPs. And I think like CSPs are trying to...
You also think that the utility providers will still be these 5, 6, 7 players who have already figured out how to get this thing done, because it's not easy. I mean, what AWS has been able to do is not easy. I mean, servicing millions of customers, mission critical, keeping the SLA and continuously meeting the demands is not easy. It's something that requires, you know, expertise. It's an art, you know, discipline. But I don't think that you will have like hundreds of utility providers. But yes, software and skills, you can offer it based on top of these utilities. So I guess that's what you're also saying.
Yeah. So
yeah,
my point of view is that this is we're not there yet. But what we are seeing is in the traditional on-premises world, we used to have this service providers, right? And lots of service providers. But at the end of the day, when they were serving public, internet, what actually caught all the revenue was the Netflixes of the world, right? Which is the over-the-top application, right? So this is exactly what's going and coming down the road, right? That these CSPs, they do what they do best, which is, you know, maintaining these data centers and providing applications such as infrastructure as a code, right? And this infrastructure as a code is actually being used by software providers to build something on top of it, right? And provide that as a service to their end customers. That's exactly the analogy that I have in my mind. And that's where the industry is progressing towards. Although the CSPs are trying their best to be relevant in that space as well at the same time, yeah. But they have a bound, and that bound is their own the CSPs, whatever they build, is on top of their infrastructure, right? Like AWS cannot build a service that will utilize the infrastructure that GCP and Oracle and OCI and Alibaba and all of that provide, right? But Avitrix can, right? And Avitrix is doing that, right? And that in itself is what the other providers are also doing. For example, the other Snowflakes and what we mentioned earlier, right? So we provide that visibility and control, and even from a networking standpoint, you know, traffic steering capabilities. You know, the high touch points that a network architect wants to look into, the network engineering team wants to look into, right? Across different clouds in the same way, even inserting services, security services. So for example, you know, Palos and the FortiGates of the world, right? And you want to insert those. You don't have to rely on building that skill set again, as you mentioned earlier, Avgani, about Terraform, right? So you build that skill set with Avatrix, and you kind of build that architecture across different clouds whenever, wherever it is needed, wherever the business requires, you go and deploy the same set. If you look at how AWS or the CSPs actually expand their regions, is they have a fixed recipe, right? That how they build their architecture. And many of the times they have gone public to say that, okay, we build our access cells from a networking standpoint, and then we build our core cells and we build our spine cells, and this is how we connect them. And this is a repeatable model that we do every time when we are expanding to a region, AZs, whatnot, right? I believe that the Avitrix platform has a recipe, right, that we can repeat in every cloud, in every region. And many of these over-the-top providers, I would say, will use this underlying CSPs as the service providers, as an underlay, to kind of repeat that and provide the same service to customers across multiple clouds.
I completely agree with what you're saying, both of you. We've seen Goldman Sachs recently announce that they're going to look to start building their own financial services cloud. You know, whether that's going to be on top of the CSPs or whether that's going to be their own infrastructure that they build out in their own data centers, that's yet to be seen, you know. Interesting. Newman, we do what we always do. It's so interesting, we run over. I think, look, we need to start wrapping up. But just before we do, guys, I've just got a question for you. You're both relatively new on Avatrix, and you know, a lot of our customers have started their DIY journey. They've gone to cloud native. Then all of a sudden, they've been introduced to Avatrix. They love what they see on Avatrix. One of the questions they always pose is, how difficult is it going to be to bring you in to our live production environment? I can't afford the downtime. I can't afford to take any risks. I'd just like to understand, in your opinion, because you're relatively new on the company, if you've had the experience of introducing or shoehorning Avatrix into a live customer deployment, how easy, in your opinion, has that been? Abdul, you go. Yeah.
So I'll go first. So I've been into many of these conversations sitting at AWS, where we had been in a specific architecture within AWS, for example, VPC peering, and the customer wants to migrate to Transit Gateway, for example. And soon that conversation will be from AWS Transit Gateway to AWS Cloud WAN, for example, in future, hopefully. And there is a methodology that we use to kind of move customers from one architecture to another, and ensuring that that's the least time that we can incur during that process. What I found, and to be very specific, useful, is that while AWS professional services organizations do not have a dedicated networking wing to start with, right? They don't have a dedicated networking wing. Like, I have 10 different professional consultants in this region that will just do networking, right? Unlike that, Avatrix professional services has a dedicated, all the people that are coming into Avatrix have deep networking expertise. They may have one or two cloud or none of the cloud expertise, but they have a deeper understanding of networking and how the platform behaves, right? And I believe that, you know, I've come across some of the places where I've brought some of the professional services consultant from our side, Avatrix side, to navigate how they actually will do actually a migration, right? And what I found interesting was that that is their prime concern of how much downtime the customer will incur during that brownfield migration. And believe me, it's they use all the cloud native constructs in such a way that they do the actual impact that incurs is make before build. So there is a saying in traffic engineering where we used to do what we call fast reroute. It will build a separate tunnel ready for the traffic to go over before we break the previous tunnel, and we transition that to that new tunnel before we break the older tunnels, right? So that's a graceful migration. And that's what I believe is that, you know, when you will use Aviatrix as a platform and you want to move your existing infrastructure within one CSP or multiple CSP, you'll get that white glove service from Aviatrix to move that infrastructure with incurring the least downtime possible. That's what my experience had been so far working with customers and involving Aviatrix professional services team.
Yeah. It's always a little bit of a worry with a customer, especially a large enterprise who's got a lot of native services, the use of the native network in it, et cetera. It's always a worry. I can understand it, but you're absolutely spot on, Abdul, with our professional services, the white gloves treatment. They automate everything. They run their scripts to understand what's going on in the current native world and then transfer that into Aviatrix and into Terraform, and then makes the migration a lot more risk averse. Nothing's ever risk free, but at least we minimize the risk to the absolute minimum with our professional services team.
Absolutely. All right. So I think we are over time almost now. John, always like always. Maybe we can. And I know that we are right now in three different time zones. EMEA, John, you are in EMEA, London. Evgeny and Rahim is in ENZ, and I'm here in San Francisco. So three different time zones coming together. So as a tradition, what we want to do, Evgeny and Rahim, is we want to leave our audience with one key takeaway, right? And obviously, you guys are at the top of the top when it comes to AWS experience and AWS networking. Evgeny, what's your takeaway? And then Rahim, you can go next.
Yeah, thanks, Soman. Yeah, I think like the key takeaway for me is that we're very early on in that journey of having consistent networking across multiple clouds, right? Very early. In fact, if you think about Cisco in the 90s, if you had a chance to do CCIE in like 1995, right? Now's your chance to actually go and do that. With Aviatrix, with multi-cloud, with consistent networking across all those different clouds, right? If you had this time machine, could go back to 95 and invest into like obtaining your CCIE, you've got that time machine right now. You can actually go do that, right? Which I think is super cool, right? So that's my key takeaway. Just think about being, this new trend. We are very, very early in this.
Very good.
My takeaway is that if you are a networking person and you have been involved with cloud networking aspects, and you want visibility and control much more than what the CSP can natively provide you, and you want to use that skill set, learning once and kind of reuse it whatever cloud comes your way, I would suggest you strongly recommend you to start looking at Aviatrix platform. Start with ACE associate course, as Evgeny mentioned earlier, to start your journey, because it will give you a good insight into what the networking constructs of different cloud service providers are, and then how Aviatrix builds its overlay on top of it. And overlay is not a new technology to begin with. It's been in the industry for a while.
Right.
That's great. Yeah, and fantastic. I know that you are a big fan of ACE, infrastructure as a code, IAC. So for sure, for people who are listening, just go to aviatrix.com, search for Aviatrix trainings and start at least with the associate, and you will end up learning some Terraform, even if you have no experience with Terraform through ASIAC as well. I know that Evgeny, you and Rahim, both of you are very eager to help consult with customers who are in the cloud journey. And I sometimes say that people who have been like 2-3 years even in cloud, they are very lucky. And then at the same time, now they have a lot of responsibility go and teach the community, teach the customers, help them being prescriptive, because there are a lot of mistakes happening in terms of how people are taking the journey, right? So because think about this, right? If your final architecture is based on that multi-cloud footprint or is based on multiple vendors, then no single vendor or CSP can guide you in the right direction. You need to be able to go and get a view of how things need to be, right? And then you can plan it better. I know you guys do a lot of that consulting. So any word for your customers who may want to pick up time with you guys to learn about Aviatrix or in general, just cloud, their approach is correct or not? So what would you leave your audience with?
Yeah, look, have a look at the podcast description. You'll find our names. Connect with us on LinkedIn. I share lots of nuggets and tidbits of information through posting there. But, you know, like there's nothing better than an actual one-on-one with an expert and maybe a virtual whiteboard session, right? So do reach out and contact us. You know, we've got multiple people in expanding in this region, but also equally, you know, globally. I know our team is eager to kind of to share this learnings and knowledge. You know, like don't be stranger, just reach out. You know, we don't bite. We want to help people to realize how to, you know, how to do things better with the some of the tool and technology and capabilities that we've got. And, you know, like as Naaman said, we've got proficiency across multiple CSPs and that consistent architecture and approach, right? So I think we can definitely help you. And it doesn't matter if you single cloud and not even think about multi-cloud, right? You can future-proof, save yourself a lot of time and money down the track, right? So, you know, if you're in technical engineering, think about your CIO, CISO, you know, think about those folks. They, you know, they want to future-proof. They don't want to burn money and put them into like a money furnace. You know, like they want to do the right decision early on, right? I think like we've got some good insights to share, so do reach out to us.
And thanks a lot, Evgeny and Rahim, for joining.
Yeah, really insightful, guys.
No one for inviting us. Yeah.